Rafa Benitez. Rafa Benitez. Rafa Benitez. Feels like just yesterday we were singing that song as Liverpool supporters. Seems like just yesterday those sounds are echoing around Anfield. That was 10 plus years ago. Rafa Benitez today was sacked as manager of Real Madrid. We asked oh so many times, so many guests on the show talked about this. Would Rafa get a fair shake at Real Madrid? Would he really get a fair shake? Well, getting canned after 18 matches, 6 or 7 months into a 3-year contract with his team, 4 points off of first place in third behind Atletico and Barcelona, 11 wins, 4 draws, 3 losses. I don't know if I'm going to call that getting a fair shake. Rafa Benitez canned at Real Madrid and replaced by Zinedine Zidane. The plot thickens. Zizou into the technical seat at Real Madrid. And I love that Rafa's final act as Real Madrid manager was a 2-2 draw at the Mestalla against Valencia. Sensational match, by the way. Fantastic call on TV from our good friends Phil Shane and Ray Hudson, by the way, over there at BN. But Gary Neville gets to be the manager that in some ways you could say knocked Rafa off of his job perch there at Real Madrid. Zinedine Zidane in to manage at Real Madrid. Would you believe it? My name is Nate Albarea. This is World Soccer Talk Radio. We've got a very fun show in store for you today. A man by the name of Gary Town is going to be with us. A man who specializes in football portraits and has a very interesting book coming out regarding ghost stadiums. We'll talk all about that and so much more. His signature art collection and works to come from the man known as Paul Town. Shout out to LFC San Francisco, San Francisco City FC, all of the Irish pubs that we went into on our Irish New Year's Day bar crawl in the Richmond District. Shout out to the Keysar and the Hate, the downright fabulosity in the Castro, the Yups in the Marina, the rugged nostalgia in the Fillmore. I had a damn good time in San Francisco this past weekend, in case you couldn't tell. Happy New Year, everybody. We're back after this right here on Sports Byline. We're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue. And then we'll take it higher. Oh, we're gonna rock down to Electric Avenue. And then we'll take it higher.
You're listening to World Soccer Talk Radio with your host, Nate Albarea, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Where you from, mate?
Just around.
Welcome back to the show. Happy New Year, everybody. Good to be back with you. My name is Nate Albarea. Tweet me at NateWST. Get a hold of all of us at World Soccer Talk. Thanks for listening to us live every day right here on Sports Byline and subscribing to us in podcast form. iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. Leave us a review on iTunes when you get a chance. And again, get involved in that wild thing known as the Twittersphere. All of you Rafa Benitez haters and Rafa Benitez sympathizers, please get at me at NateWST. Our guest in this edition of the show, I don't know if we've ever had an artist on the show before. This is actually a very special edition of World Soccer Talk Radio. This man is an artist that specializes in stadium portraits and is currently working on a book featuring original artwork of soccer stadiums that are no longer existent. Shall we call them ghost stadiums? Cannot wait to talk about all that and more. Paul Town, thank you so much for joining us, sir.
No problem. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I got to open with something that we were having a laugh about off air. I am a Liverpool supporter through and through, sure. And I've been scouring your websites and going through your work over the last couple of days, and it is just absolutely fantastic. Some of these stadium portraits give me chills in many ways, and I'm going through them, and they're listed alphabetically, and I'm going through it. We start with Aberdeen. We go to Accrington Stanley. The nostalgia is just flowing. Then we get down to Chelsea, Darlington, Everton. I'm thinking, all right, we're coming up on Liverpool. Yeah. And we get to Leeds, and then we get to Lincoln City, and then suddenly we're into the M's. Tell us what happened to Anfield, sir.
Well, it's a strange question. Well, it's not a strange question, because obviously you picked up on it. But Generally, I get a lot of work through the smaller clubs because the smaller clubs have got a smaller fan base. And I think what it entails is that there's more communication within the clubs and the fans themselves, and the word seems to get around quicker. So obviously, when people hear what I'm doing and how what a unique product it is, it just seems to have more flavour to the smaller clubs. Unfortunately, financially, I'd love to get a Liverpool portrait. I mean, that is actually one in the bag to be started in January for a guy who's got a sports retail outlet in Norway. So hopefully by February time, I should have an Anfield portrait to show the world, yeah.
Well, I look forward to it, Paul. Now, tell us how you got started with all this. I know you're a Bradford City supporter and someone who was not only raised on the game, but really taught the history of the game and the pride and working class passion of the game in the UK. Talk about how you got into these stadium portraits and got into painting in the first place.
Well, it's quite a long story, really. I mean, my dad's been a massive influence on me watching football, but from probably being about 5 years old, and up and down the old terrace in at Bradford City. And all the stories that my dad used to tell me from being very young have always sort of, been in the back of my mind. And I used to draw stadiums when we'd been to watch Bradford away. I used to draw the away stadiums where I visited and just got so much pleasure out of it. Obviously, I started work and my artistic sort of flair seemed to leave me for a long time. And then about 3 years ago, I started doing some drawings again and started really enjoying myself. And the passion for the stadiums came back. Lo and behold, that Christmas, my mum, Maggie, she bought me some paints for Christmas. And she just said, look, have a go. You seem to be doing a lot of pencil drawings. Why don't you try and paint? So this is what I did. And it literally just sort of took off from nowhere, from something that started off as an hobby. Within 3 or 4 months, I was selling paintings. And it was just like I had to pinch myself at first because I didn't actually know what was going on. But apart from the stadiums, just painting stadiums of any format, it was a friend of mine that actually brought it to my attention, because what I was doing was painting match scenes that people actually wanted. So, like, for instance, Anfield, you could have Liverpool against Everton or whatever. And he actually said it's quite a unique thing you're doing because you're actually personalising the portraits, and that's really what it's all about.
Now, Paul, you talk about, having to pinch yourself sometimes and just how dreamlike this is. I got to say, as someone viewing your art, the art itself has a very dreamlike quality. And I don't want to overuse the word nostalgia, but it just flows every time I look at these things. Talk about that feeling and what you're trying to evoke as an artist with these stadium portraits.
I don't think it's potentially anything that I'm trying to... Well, I am trying to bring the memories back and I'm trying to paint the portraits with a certain nostalgic flair behind them. And I think it's not something that I initially started off thinking about, trying to portray that sort of look. It sort of just happened. I can only paint in this style, and I don't know if it's something I was just given from birth or some form of gift. Obviously, I have been given a gift, and I really appreciate that. I'm thankful for that, but it's nothing that I don't try to copy any other artwork. It's just the way it comes out.
Well, absolutely. And talk about now what these stadium drawings, this is such an open-ended question, but the ones that have been the most influential for you, do they at all blend together, or are there any of these grounds, or whether they're based off of your own viewing with your own eyes or historical pictures, are there any of them that really bring out something extra in you?
It's a tough question, is that, because But obviously, I get commissioned to paint football stadiums, and what I try to do is subconsciously take myself out of my own body and put myself into somebody else's body and try and recapture the flavour of the stadiums from the past, and try and recapture how the genuine fan felt watching football in the 70s and 80s, which is when I was brought up. And I think we've lost our way in football in the UK. It's become an expensive commodity. And obviously with the Bradford fire, which I was involved in, obviously the safety legislation has come in now, and you know, the stadiums have had to become more safe places to watch. But in hindsight, that I think that we've lost our way in the form of character in stadiums. And I suppose the nearest thing I could for the people who are listening in the States is relate that to is the old baseball stadiums, which seem to have a lot more character before the new stadiums were built. That's probably the nearest thing I could relate to it, really.
Well, absolutely, and it's definitely a comparison I've brought up myself many a times. Yeah. And looking in particular in the New York City area, all the way into to the 1950s and such. And it's such an interesting comparison that you make there, and one that I'd love to expand on. Now we'll continue this in the next segment, because I want to talk to you all about the book and this idea of ghost stadiums. But talk about where this idea came from and how special it is, and tying it back to even the comparison that you make with American baseball grounds.
Yeah, I mean, the ghost stadiums was in the back of my mind probably about 2 years ago. Where I'm from, Bradford, we used to have two professional football league teams. Unfortunately, one of the teams who my father used to follow as well as Bradford City, Bradford Park Avenue, went out of existence in 1972. And their stadium was an unbelievable Edwardian structure. And the thought of ghost stadiums, it originated from myself visiting the stadium as an 10-year-old child. And we actually broke in, a pal of mine, but we actually broke in, it was on our summer holidays, and we found a small gap in the gate, and we entered this old stadium, which was sort of defunct and overgrown in a lot of respects, but it was just the sight of the stadium and the ghostly presence, which I felt, trying to picture the players running around this old stadium and the fans cheering, and it always stuck in the back of my mind. And the title Ghost Stadium just hopefully tries to reflect that. And so I can bring some form of ghostly presence to the book where it can just bring memories back for the true fans.
Well, without a doubt. His name is Paul Towne. My name is Nate Abarea. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the new book featuring original artwork of soccer stadiums that are no longer in existence. Call them ghost stadiums. Call them what you will. Very much enjoying this conversation. Hope you are as well. It's World Soccer Talk Radio right here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Stay with us.
Listening to World Soccer Talk Radio with your host, Nate Abarea, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
This man is absolute magic that belongs in a different galaxy altogether.
We're back here with Paul Towne on World Soccer Talk Radio. Be sure to check out the website, by the way, www.stadiumportraits.com. I've been scouring this thing over the last couple of days and right this second as well. And there's one right now. We were joking about how Anfield isn't present on the list, but a stadium very close to Anfield is most definitely present on the site. And it's your portrait of Goodison Park, Paul, and the thing. It gives me goosebumps. It's a stadium that I got to step foot in when I was just 8 years old and always has a special place in my heart and the way I've always been treated by Evertonians. And from what I hear, this is actually a very special piece to you as well.
Yeah, I mean, the portrait from Goodison Park was actually commissioned by kitbag.com, who sell the football strips through Everton Superstore. Now, they gave me sort of a free rein, really, to paint what I wanted on this portrait. And I think that to put the church in at Goodison, that no portrait at Goodison Park would be worthwhile without, you know, having the church involved in the portrait. And the old main stand, which was constructed by it was like an hero of mine, Archibald Leitch, with the lattice working that stand, was just an iconic feature. So I went for the 1966 look, where the cutouts behind the goal were put in for the 1966 World Cup. So I try to incorporate different things within the portrait that, you know, reflects that era, really.
Now, Paul, you touched on something very interesting there, and we were chatting off air, and I talk with Toffee supporters all the time about that main stand at Everton. You know, the church is so special. There's something also about that main stand. It is so unique in oh so many ways. And you're familiar with the guys who actually designed these iconic structures. Talk about your passion for studying the architects and the structural designers of these grounds.
Well, I mean, I'm actually a builder by trade anyway. I've worked in construction for 30 years up until, you know, earlier on this year when I decided to take the plunge and go full time. Now, I mean, I understand construction to a large degree. So, I mean, to study architects really was, especially Archibald Leitch, who designed football stadiums in the UK, was a pleasure reading his book. Archie was a very clever guy. He actually maximised the capacity of stadiums within the constraints of the land that he had to work with. A really, really clever chap. Now, in some respects, he was actually put under a lot of pressure. I was reading an article last night just on the Ibrox disaster where I can't remember how many people lost their lives, but I mean, a colossal accident. And he was ridiculed for that. But then he actually came back stronger and he had to sort of look at his own practices and the football stadiums that he built as from then on were just fantastic. And also pleasing to the eye, you know, the character behind them was just second to none. And even more so in Bradford, both the stadiums, Bradford Park Avenue and Bradford City, have had a massive influence through Arch's work. Where he developed stadiums to, as I say, maximise the capacities, but just the flair of the flavour of the stadiums were just unbelievable at that time.
Now, Paul, you talk about designing the stadiums to maximise capacity, and that actually ties back to the comparison that you made to American baseball grounds in the early 20th century, back in the last segment, in that whether they're the old baseball grounds or these old football grounds that you do these portraits of, they were built in the heart of neighborhoods, in the heart of working class neighborhoods. And one of the things I love about your paintings is that in so many of them, you incorporate the background. You show the housing projects that are built all around these, or that in many ways were built before these stadiums. Talk about the vibe of the neighborhoods in these old portraits and what that means to you, and is it something that you miss with new football grounds?
I think new football grounds are ten a penny. It's really, I'm quite disappointed when I go watch football games now in regards to the stadiums I visit. Yes, they're comfortable, but there doesn't seem to be any character or sort of, you know, I don't get the enjoyment like I used to do when I was a child, when I used to go to a stadium and look at the different shaped stands for me. You know, each four sides of the different stand and terracings and the even the external. Valley Parade at Bradford was an iconic stadium in the 1970s because you could see out of the stadium because it's built into a valley, and you could see all the industry. The outside of the stadiums and the terrace houses and the mills, and it was just absolutely fantastic to look at. And I think subconsciously, I don't think it's something I mean to put in the portraits. It's just seeing for me, it has to be there. Just looking at a football stadium, it must seem fairly bland. But if you can incorporate external factors of any city within a portrait, I just think it gives something for everyone.
Couldn't agree more, Paul. And I want to go back now to actually what we're going to be continuing talking about here. That is the Ghost Stadium book and this new project of yours all about stadiums that are no longer in existence. And you talk about the ground in Bradford that you're also familiar with, but give us a taste and a feel for some other quote unquote ghost stadiums that are really inspiring you to get this project up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the Accrington Stanley Stadium at Peel Park. I visited the stadium about 10 years ago now. And the stadium, actually, the format of the stadium is still all there. It's just like a playing field. But the banking's from the old terracing is still there. But I could literally, from looking at pictures, when I was walking on the field, I could literally feel the vibrancy of the place. And visually, I could picture the stands enveloping me within that, the grassed area I was stood on at the time. It's a bit of a strange thing. I can go to a stadium and I can come away, I can literally paint or draw the stands without having much like pictures from books and things. I don't know, it's some sort of skill or photographic memory that I've got that I can recapture things. I just love doing it. I can't really talk any more about how much pleasure I get out of it. That's just awesome, really.
I want to ask you about another project of yours. It's something that is up on the site, and it's the classic kits. And this raises so much more here, because this is a whole another department. Yeah. But talk about the passion for these kits, and especially as an artist, and I mean down to the simplest forms of art, of just being into color and being into progression and growth and change of tone. Talk about how this came about.
I think literally similar to the stadiums, really. I used to like join the footballers when I was younger as well, in the various strips that there were. So I think it's just a continuation of what I did when I was a child. And with football strips now being a massive industry, and you know, I think the football strips nowadays are they're a bit of a joke, to be honest. And I just prefer the classic 70s strips, which is what I used to see on TV and when I watched Bradford. Far superior to the strips they wear today. And I think the fans now, they're really yearning for that sort of thing within their households, where they can look back and at maybe 10 to 12 different strips that they used to watch their teams in an art form. And it's fantastic painting them. It's almost going to my own little world for like 8 hours and just zone out, basically. And it's just so pleasurable.
Well, and it's also a trip through time. That's one of the main things I've really enjoyed. Yeah. I mean, about all of your work, but with these classic kits, you do it in an interesting way, where you'll start with a player seemingly in the early 1900s, then right next to him you got a player about the 30s and 40s, then we get into the 70s. I mean, talk about the time travel experience that you must have as you're doing this.
I think it's quite simple, really. I mean, if you're a football fan, you have a... Everyone has an image of their club strips down the years. I think it's just it's a nice thing to be asked, commissioned to paint. It's someone, the beauty behind these portraits is that people can pick the strips that they actually love from the past. And that's what it is. You know, it's not about me choosing the strips. It's about the people out there wanting as much as possible from the portraits from me.
Paul, apart from Bradford City, who's got your favourite kits in all of England?
Oh, favourite strips. It's a real tough one, is that? Because I had so many football kits as a youth. I had Manchester United, dare I say it, Leeds United, Aston Villa, just colossal Derby County. We just, me and my uncle, we used to play football on the backyard, and we used to wear different strips. You know, go and wear a Derby strip for 10 minutes and then go back in and get changed and put a Bradford strip on. And it was like mini cup final football. But you know, that's things you did as a child, and I think that's what I'm trying to capture, really. I think I've lost so much time running my businesses that I've just lost the passion that I had as a child, and now I've got it back. It's a dream come true.
Oh, it's definitely flowing right now. Again, the website is www.stadiumportraits.com. You can check out all of the football grounds that we've been discussing on here, the classic kits. It's got information on commissioning paintings through Paul and all sorts of other testimonials and pop arts and many features within the signature collection. So I really encourage everybody to check out stadiumportraits.com. It ties back to Paul's roots with Bradford City and everything that goes along with that. Again, stadiumportraits.com. Be sure to check it out. We'll put up a link on Twitter for sure. My name is Nate Abarrea. His name is Paul Towne. You're listening to World Soccer Talk Radio. Continuing this conversation on the other side of the break, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Stay with us. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to World Soccer Talk Radio right here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. My name is Nate Albaurea, and if you are looking for an advantage when betting on soccer, I want to let you know about a unique open betting platform called FanBet. FanBet allows you to follow your friends and top-ranked bettors to get a wealth of betting tips to help improve your real money bets. Here's how it works. FanBet runs a weekly contest called Fan Play. Members place bets on Premier League games. You know that league. Using betting credits, the game data is analyzed and the top bettors are ranked according to their success. FanBet allows you to see live picks and betting history of these players. And by following winning bettors, logic implies you will become more successful. Sign up today for your free account at fanbet.com. After you log in to your FanBet account, first thing you'll see, it's a live stream of picks from winning bettors, each bettor ranked based on their average return from their last five bets. Then you can add any pick to the odds tracker, and FanBet will compare leading bookmakers to give you the best available odds for your money. It's as simple as that. Improve your soccer betting returns with FanBet.com. A huge thank you to FanBet for their support of World Soccer Talk Radio, helping us to get on the air with you every single day right here on Sports Byline. And again, subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. Tweet me at NateWST and get a hold of all of us at World Soccer Talk. Continuing now with our guest in this edition of the show, first time we've ever had an artist as a guest on this show. His name is Paul Towne. Been talking all about the stadium portraits, the new project, all about ghost grounds and abandoned football stadiums in England and in Scotland, and that transitions into something I want to ask you about here, Paul, and that is your work is very much firmly focused on your area of expertise and where you grew up and grounds that you have firsthand knowledge of, or at the least have people who can tell you firsthand stories about these places. Have you ever considered perhaps internationalizing your work and going on to more to the European continent or touring Latin America or thinking about World Cup grounds? Has that thought ever crossed your mind?
There's a lot of things crossing my mind at present, but at the moment I'm just trying to make a living and get the business up and running so it can tick along, basically. And it's funny you should mention the continent in Europe. Some that could be on the cards within the next few months, where I maybe gain a few commissions from Holland. I've got a contact in Holland, and he's going to start pushing the market out there for me. I think he's called Andy Fuller. He's writing books on stadium and stadium culture, and he's pushing it out there for me. So hopefully the market's going to expand. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like any business. It needs time to grow, but I want to let it grow naturally and not sort of rush the thing.
Well, Paul, I want to talk with you a little bit more about the commissions and how that's becoming something that is obviously boosting your professional status and allowing you to make a living with this. Talk about how that's really come about. I mean, obviously, word of mouth is key, and getting as many handshakes and meeting as many people as possible. But talk about how commissions in Holland or commissions even in England, even right there in the north of England, how those are coming about for you and how they're becoming more frequent.
I think the powers of social media has been a massive help within the business. Just touching on football ground sites on Facebook and Twitter and just communicating with people and then making friends where we talk about things. And then it seems to come naturally. And I'm currently painting the old Molineux Stadium at Wolves. And I've just put a shot on the Wolves page on Facebook tonight, and there's a lot of people saying, "Oh, I was there that game," and all, you know, and it's just really nice that people can talk about these things. And then, you may get a commission, or I may sell the original. I produce limited edition prints, so hopefully I'll get sales from the prints. And it's just how it works, really. And then somebody will buy a print, and then may tell a friend, and he sees it, or she sees it, and then it's just like a snowball effect, really.
Now, you brought up the originals and the prints, and we were talking about this off air. It's something quite interesting for any artist, and I know it's something that you've had experience with, and that is selling original paintings. You also have a medium and a specialty that really allows you to. You talk about the limitless prints, and the prints are key for the success of what you're doing. But talk about the concept of selling your original artwork, and some of these places where your original artwork is actually being displayed right now.
Yeah, I mean, currently I've got an original piece in the club shop at Everton Football Club at Goodison Park. And it's because it's a personalised thing. I mean, people can approach me to have portraits painted, and they can have their first game. You know, what I do is I research the strips the teams wore at that time and what the stadium looked like, and I can paint the scene that should hopefully bring them a lot of pleasure and memories back. So that's really what Stadium Portrait stands for. It's about the memories.
Without a doubt. And I got to ask you now about something. We already made a baseball comparison earlier in the show, but I got to ask you now about something that is very near and dear to my heart. We move away from football grounds. We're not going to baseball stadiums. We're going to rugby grounds, and specifically rugby league grounds, something that is very northern. And I actually had the great pleasure of getting to know the St. Helens Leeds rivalry when I was in England. And just the phenomenal rugby league history in Leeds and in St. Helens. And I got to ask you about your roots with rugby. You've got rugby union and rugby league covered here, but talk about what rugby league means to Bradford and the Bradford Bulls. And it's a very authentically northern thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a northern. It's mainly Lancashire and Yorkshire teams that encapsulate the rugby league culture. I actually follow Leeds Rhinos for my sins. Obviously, treble winners, so it's not much of a sin at the moment. But yeah, the rugby league is huge, I don't think it gets the credit or the publicity it deserves. Really, it's a fantastic game, and you know, painting the rugby league portraits as well. I've done two of Halifax. I've got others in the pipeline, and to paint the rugby post on a rugby league ground, it's really exciting because it just brings a totally different look to the stadiums. And if that can be blended with the external aspects like the terrace housing, mills, chimneys, then all well and good, which is a lot of these grounds that you know, in the town, in the centre of towns, are not like built out of town stadiums now. It's just recapturing that flavour and the essence of northern life, really, that I try to portray.
I love it, capturing northern life, without a doubt. And I got to ask you about something, an interesting one here within the Rugby League collection. And it's one that you did of Fartown Huddersfield Rugby League Football Club, the Giants. And it's a black and white painting. It almost looks like a charcoal drawing. It has such an old feel to it. And I don't see too many of those within your work. But is that something that you're into, doing the black and white paintings?
They're literally just pencil drawings. I mean, that's how I started doing them as a child. And the one you see of Fartown literally is, it's a sketch to help me with a future painting. Now, when I've done the sketch, people said, "Oh, that's really good, Paul. You should show that." And that's why it's on the website. I personally don't like the drawing, but what it does, it gives me a flavour. So I can go in and execute that portrait whenever I see fit. I know what I'm going to do. I know which angles I'm going to use and hopefully what it's going to turn out to be. So that's in the pipeline to actually do the Fartown, the old Huddersfield ground at some stage.
Is that something that you experience fairly often where you're like, you know what, I'm really not that high on this painting, and then someone comes up to you and goes, "Oh my God, that was my favorite one. I absolutely loved it." I mean, how does that make you feel as an artist?
I think it's one of those things that it's a real strange one with artwork where I can get a painting which I'm buzzing from and other people can't see it, and then other people buzz off things I can't see. So it's a really interesting question, and it's probably one I will never be able to answer. It's just that I think art is a personal thing. It's like a lot of people nowadays are like the modern art stuff. I can't stand it. I love to see old paintings. So it's all about taste.
Paul, who are some of your favorite artists going back as far as you'd like here?
Again, that is a real tough question because I've never really sort of idolised any artist in particular. Obviously, there's the Northern influence with you know, Ellis Lowry is huge. But then again, I can look at Lowry's work and I think, well, yeah, I can either take it or leave it. So it's art is so, such a broad subject. And I think one of the major influences on my artwork becomes from within our own family. My grandma used to paint, and my grandma's brother, he used to paint, and my mum actually paints as well. She's an excellent artist, and she doesn't paint enough. But so I think that from within my own family, I was always surrounded by artwork. So I've not really reached out and looked for anything in particular that I needed influencing by.
Now, in terms of spreading the work, you address social media and how important that's been, and even those first person relationships and meeting people around England and Scotland and obviously into the European continent and elsewhere. Talk about what's next for you. You talk about really just grinding and staying focused, but there is a little bit of an expansion going on for your work right now, Paul, and the amount of people that are jumping on board with what you're trying to give to the world. So, I mean, talk about what the next big thing is for you, obviously, in addition to the book of Ghost Grounds.
Yeah. I mean, the Ghost Stadium, I mean, I've literally 7,500 words written. It's really in its infancy. So I'm looking at probably the back end of 2016 to release the book. I mean, it could be 2017, who knows, but I'm not going to rush the book. I want to get it right. But I mean, expansion is a thing that any business wants to expand. And from a personal point of view, yeah, I do want my artwork out there, but most foremost, I want people to enjoy it as much as I enjoy doing them. And it's a case of, I think the expansion thing, it's one of those things that will just take care of itself. I'm a Yorkshireman, I'm down to earth, and that's the way I'll go into my job. I get up every morning, and I go to work at 8 o'clock, and I finish at 5. I just do the normal hours, and get my head down, and churn out the paintings as I see fit, you know, and that's the way I look at it. It's not a case of me wanting to expand. I'm just hoping that it'll just take its natural course.
Without a doubt. And it's been great having you on the show, and anything we can do to spread the word regarding your work is something I'm very, very into, and I will definitely be following as everything progresses. Hey, before we let you go, I gotta ask you about this. For better or worse, they're currently down in League One, coming off kind of a nasty 3-0 defeat to Gillingham. Yeah. But I gotta ask you about Bradford City, 12th place in League One right now. Any chance of a race for a playoff spot before the season's over?
Personally, I don't think so this year. I think we're sort of treading water again as we have for the last few seasons. And I think you sometimes have to be careful what you wish for in football, because there's teams in the Championship and Premiership who have got massive debts. Bradford City are actually a debt-free club now. So I just think you do have to be careful with that. And I'm in no rush to get promotion. I just want to see a good match. Two teams having a go, you know. So it's for me... Yeah, it's one of those things. I get pleasure out of watching my own town club and being there week in, week out with my dad, and that's what I see.
I wish more people had that view of the game and just appreciating every moment, appreciating the love for the club. Well, tell you what, Paul, I hope I can get out to Valley Parade and catch a match sometime. And
you'd be more than welcome, mate.
Oh, I appreciate it. Maybe even do a little pencil drawing of Valley Parade myself. Great having you on the show. And any last words regarding your artwork to the listeners here in America and everyone else that we got listening around the world via the podcast?
Yeah, just keep your eye on it. I mean, it's something that's expanding. It's something that I've been told it's unique. It didn't start off for the meaning to be unique, but that's the way it's taken off. And I just hope people enjoy it as much as I enjoy painting them. And, you know, just link up to the website, www.stadiumportraits.com. I'm also available on Facebook and Twitter.
On Twitter, at Stadium Portrait, correct?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Facebook is just under my own personal name, Paul Town.
Beautiful. Paul Town on Facebook, at Stadium Portrait on Twitter. Paul, great pleasure and privilege having you on the show. You're welcome back anytime, mate.
Take care. Thanks, son. Bye now.
Bye. Again, that was Paul Towne. We're back after this on World Soccer Talk Radio, taking the express train home with one final salute to Rafa Benitez, now former Real Madrid manager, right here on World Soccer Talk Radio. Stay tuned. It's electric. Xabi Alonso, Garcia Nunes, Rafa Benitez. Oh, Rafa. Always have good memories of Rafa. Love Rafa. So much love for Rafa. Real Madrid, not so much love for Rafa. In case you're just joining us, in case you have been off of social media all day and off of all the soccer sites all day, Rafa Benitez sacked just 7 months into his Real Madrid tenure. Was he given a fair shake? I think not. Rafa signed a 3-year contract. This is the last point I want to make about Rafa Benitez here on World Soccer Talk Radio in our first show of 2016, first of many here in the new year. Rafa signed a 3-year contract. What does a contract even mean anymore when it comes to a manager, when it comes to a coach in any sport for that matter, but especially in the big money industry that we know as world football? A 3-year contract sacked after 7 months with his team just 4 points off of first place in La Liga. Another huge thank you to Paul Towne. Be sure to check him out on Twitter at Stadium Portraits. Check out the website, stadiumportraits.com. Thanks to the fantastic producer, Dominic Jimenez, back in San Francisco. For the gaffer, Chris Harris, my name is Nate Abareas. Signing off. Talk to you tomorrow. World Soccer Talk Radio. Love you.